pivotal point in the life of Jacob. And it becomes a crisis in the life of each individual. And you come to that point in life where you know you've been brought face to face with a challenge of God. And you have dealings with God. That's something that's being forgot today. As I have said before, and I repeat it, we seem to be living in a day of a kind of easy believism. You just make what you call your commitment, and that's all about it. It's all over now, and you're quite sure of heaven, so you do as you like. No, you don't. And so many of these people who are being brainwashed, for that's what it is, and told if you do this and do that and meet certain requirements, then you claim you're saved. Like the young lady, one occasion I was having meetings in a place, and I said to her, "Have you ever had any desire to be saved before?" She says, "Oh yes." She says, "You see, I thought I was saved." "Oh." I said, "What made you think you were saved?" "Well," she said, "I went and spoke to the preacher one night at the end of the service, and I answered every one of his questions." And she said, "I went down on my knees and I repeated the prayer after him. And he told me I was saved." What a shame. You don't get saved by repeating a prayer after a preacher. There's far too many of them doing that today. "Say this prayer after me." And they think that by saying the prayer, repeating the prayer after the preacher, that's it. Oh no, my friend. But when we're brought face to face with a challenge of God, as Jacob was that night at Bethel, he knew he was dealing with God and God was dealing with him. But that was only the beginning of his spiritual life. We're going to take him on from there tonight, and we're going to travel through the next 20 years of his life. We're going to go through chapters 29, 30 and 31 of the book of Genesis. Now, I'm not going to read all those chapters. I'm just going to read parts here and there. And when you get home, perhaps tonight or during the week, you'll get time to read those chapters again. You see, Jacob is now going, if you remember, we started with him away back in the house of disorder. That was a poor background to Jacob's career. But God brought him on from there to the house of order, Bethel, the house of God. And he saw everything in perfect order there. But now for the next 20 years, he's going to be in the house of discipline. And during these 20 years in the house of discipline, which happens to be the house of Uncle Laban, in those 20 years, God is going to train his man, years of training. And he's going to teach him certain lessons. You see, you don't know it all when you get saved. All you know is you've trusted the Savior. That's all. Little boy went to school. Came home the first day and his mama said, "How did you get on, son?" He said, "All right, I learned it all." Learned it all the first day. Well, you know what he meant, but what he said was not what he meant, really. He didn't learn it all. And you don't learn it all no matter how long you go to school. You only learn some basic things, and after you leave school, that's when you begin to put those things into practice. Now here's Jacob, he's been taught certain things when he had dealings with God. But for 20 years he's going to go through years of training in the house of discipline. Now discipline doesn't mean always the big stick or the belt or the switch. There is such a thing as self-discipline. How we can discipline ourselves. Sometimes a hard thing to do, isn't it? It's sometimes a hard thing to push yourself back from the table when there's so much on it you'd like to eat. But you say, "No, I've just had enough now. I mustn't take any more." See? It's discipline. And you've got to discipline yourself in other things. You know, they send you in, Oh, I know you get them the same as me. There's hardly a week passes but there's two or three of them come in. Your credit is so good. We can give you a credit card and you can have $5,000 in credit. You know, and I just wonder at times if some folks have them. I heard about some that had about 10 credit cards and they had run up so much they didn't know when they were going to be able to pay them all. That's not discipline, is it? You've got to learn how to discipline ourselves physically. We've got to learn how to discipline ourselves financially. We've got to learn how to discipline ourselves mentally. And we've got to learn how to discipline ourselves spiritually. Now God is going to teach Jacob three outstanding lessons for those years of training. Lesson number one is a lesson in service. Lesson number two is a lesson on order. Lesson number three is a lesson on guidance. Service, order, and guidance. He may have taught him a lot of other side lessons, you know, but these are the three main ones. Look now at chapter 29. Then Jacob went on his journey and came into the land of the people of the east. Will you stop there just for a moment? He awoke up that morning at Bethel, and you remember he raised his pillar and he conducted a little act of worship, pouring out his oil before the Lord. Oh, by the way, let me go off at a tangent for a moment. When you meet here on a Sunday morning at 9:30, you know what you meet for, don't you? Or do you? I think you do. You meet the primary reason to remember the Lord. And in remembering the Lord, there is worship. I want to say this to you, brethren. When you come on a Sunday morning, do you come with your oil to pour out before? I don't mean you to bring a little bottle of olive oil, you know what I mean. The oil that Jacob had was the most valuable thing he possessed, and he poured it out before the Lord, gave it to the Lord. When the Lord Jesus Christ went to Calvary, he poured forth his soul unto death for us. Surely when you come on a Sunday morning, you should come prepared to pour out your heart to the Lord in thanksgiving. The ladies pour out their heart in silence. God knows, like the lady who came with her alabaster box, a very precious, costly ointment. She never said a word. But she broke that box and she poured it out, and the aroma filled the whole house. Men, you're given the privilege of rising and pouring out your heart to the Lord in thanksgiving. Jacob poured out his oil. You should come with something to pour out before the Lord. Then, having done that, he went on his journey and came into the land of the people of the east. And that's all that's said about it. I wonder how long it took him. And what was he doing? You know, I remember reading this and it said, he walked, as it were, on thin air. It was no longer a drag to him. You see, he was right with God now. He wasn't simply fleeing from his brother. He's walking with the Lord. And he's walking on thin air. And it was a pleasant journey. Going now to the land of the east. Now he comes down to the well and he meets Rachel, the one for whom he's going to serve. Look at verse 11. And Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother, that he was Rebekah's son, and she ran and told father. It came to pass when Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him, and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. And he told Laban all these things, and Laban said unto him, Surely thou art my bone and my flesh. And he abode with him the space of a month. Now I want you to notice that. Very important. He abode with him the space of a month. And Laban said unto Jacob, Because thou art my brother, shouldest thou therefore serve me for naught? Tell me, what shall thy wages be? Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. Laban said, It is better that I give her to thee than I should give her to another man. Abide with me. And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had to her. We'll pause there a moment. Keep your Bibles handy with more verses to read. Now, I want you to remember something that I mentioned in our last study. When he left home, his mother said, Go away, son. Go away for a few days. And after your brother's wrath, you know, has subsided a bit and he calms himself down, I'll send for you and bring you back. I'll tell you when it's time to come back. Just a few days and it'll be all over. God said to him, I will bring thee. He arrives at Uncle Laban's house and he's there for a month. And may I suggest, he's had a lovely vacation. A whole month. Not many of you can afford to have a month's vacation, even if you do go to your uncle's. A month's vacation. But I want you to notice this, that Uncle Laban is going to teach him his first lesson. He says, Jacob, you and I will have to have a little chat together. You know, we're related. But that doesn't alter the fact you're not going to serve me for nothing. Let's make some arrangement. What will your wages be? Well, who talked about service? Jacob never said anything about serving him at all. Why? Do you remember Jacob wanted the birthright? And Jacob obtained the birthright and obtained the blessing. And having obtained the birthright, having the place of the firstborn, and having obtained the blessing, why, he expected everybody to serve him. He wasn't going to take the servant's place. Wasn't his place to serve. Why, he had the birthright. Uncle Laban wasn't going to be interested in that. He said, Shouldest thou therefore serve me for naught? Tell me, what shall thy wages be? We'll make an agreement. But you can rest assured, if you're going to be here, my boy, you're going to serve. You're going to work. Jacob never introduced it at all. Uncle Laban did. And Jacob had to face the issue. If I'm going to be here, my mother hasn't sent for me yet. I don't know. I'll have to stay here. So the first lesson he's got to learn is a lesson on service. Service. You know, it's a very interesting lesson, eh? Let me take your minds forward now into the New Testament for a moment. Here's the Lord Jesus Christ in the upper room. And with him there that night, the apostles. Now remember this. These men have been traveling with him for some time. He's been teaching them. Their whole thought is this. He's the Messiah. He's going to set up his kingdom. And when he sets up his kingdom, we will be the cabinet. We'll be the chief officers in the kingdom. We're going to have a place in the kingdom. In fact, they argued about it. And two of them wanted to have the chief seats. One wanted to be on his right hand, another wanted to be in his left hand. And they got their mother to go and make the request. You set up the kingdom, well, my boys get to sit one on your right hand and one on your left hand. Do you remember that? But that night in the upper room, the last night with them, before his crucifixion, When they went into that upper room that night, the room was furnished. And amongst the furnishings of the room, there was a basin. And there was a vessel full of water. And there was a towel. Now these things were put there for the use of the servant. It was the servant's job to use these. When the guests came in and sat around, it was the servant's place to take that basin and put it under the feet of the guests who had travelled on the highway, take off their sandals, and out of the vessel of water to pour water on their feet over the basin. You see, they didn't wash their hands and their feet in dirty water as you and I do. They didn't fill the basin and put their hands in and wash their dirty hands first and then take that dirty water to wash their face. That's a Western, modern idea. They washed in running water. You and I are just learning to do that now. That's why we have our showers now, and why we have those little showers also for your hands. The doctors do it now, don't they? They've learned. But in the East, they did it all the time. They poured the water, running water, and they washed the feet, and they took the towel, and they dried the feet of the guests. But that's lying in the corner, and these men have already seated themselves at the table with the master, and the supper has started. And they've waited. And right in the very midst of the supper, he rises from the table. He lays aside his outer garment. And he goes and girds himself with a big towel. And he takes the basin and the vessel with the water and goes round. What's he doing? He has taken the servant's place. But isn't he the master? Yes, they call him Master, and they call him Lord. Why is he washing their feet? Because none of them would do it. None of them would do it. And he has taken the servant's place. Of course, we can't go into details of what happened when he came to Peter. You would read that for yourself. But, at the end he says, "Now, ye call me Master, and you call me Lord." Now, if I'm your master, if I'm your teacher, you ought to be prepared to listen to the lesson that I'm teaching. If you call me Lord, you ought to be obedient to the commands that I give. So there's a lesson by the teacher, and there's a command by the Lord. Now he says, "You've seen what I have done for you. I've taught you your lesson. That's the lesson you have to learn, and that's what you have to do for one another. Wash your feet." But you call me Lord when I'm giving you a command now. What you've seen me do, I want you to do for one another. He was teaching them a lesson on service. Now, when the Apostle Paul wrote his letter to the Thessalonian church, he said at the end of chapter 1, "Ye turn to God from idols to serve the living and the true God, and to wait for his Son from heaven." Now see the terminal point. He turned to God. Jacob turned to God in chapter 28. But now he's to learn how to serve. He turned to God and to wait for his Son from heaven, but lying in between, the years between, to serve the living and the true God. You see, we've got to learn our lesson on service. Of course, he's bargained with Uncle Laban. He's going to serve. He says, "I'm willing to serve," and the bargain he struck was this: "I'll serve you 7 years for Rachel." He's attracted by her beauty. That was a great pity. Wonder how many men have been attracted by beauty. had the one fellow who got married. The girl he married was a great singer. He loved to hear her singing. Of course, when she went singing, she had all the fancy hairdo and all the makeup and whatnot, you know, and she just looked beautiful up in the public eye. And she looked well that night they got married. And the next morning when they woke up and he looked at her, he says, "Will you sing?" "Will you sing?" Yeah. You know, beauty, they say, is only skin deep. It used to be that. It's not even skin deep now. It's only on the surface. The kind they have now. But real beauty you do not buy at the drugstore, you know. That's the kind you put on. Real beauty, you get it back in the Proverbs in the last chapter, is what comes out. Real beauty is what comes out, not what goes on. But he looked at Rachel, and oh, he was fascinated with Rachel. She looked so beautiful. And her old sister Leah, well, her eyes were a bit weak, you know. He wasn't so attracted to Leah, not to begin with. He said, "I'll serve you 7 years for Rachel." 7 years. Oh my. Nowadays they go away in the summertime for vacation and they meet in July, they get engaged in August and they want you to marry them in September. Then they want divorce before the end of the year. That's how it goes. They've never learned the truth. Here was a man who was prepared to serve, and he was willing to serve for 7 years. Patient serving. Now let me say this. You and I are asked to serve the Lord. And you may not get your reward down here at all. Your service may be hard. And your service may be difficult. And you may see very, very little fruit for the service. You know this. John the Baptist did no miracle. The greatest of the prophets never performed a miracle. And he saw very little for the service that he rendered. As a result of his steadfastness, as a result of his ministry, he was put in prison. And just because of the whims and fancies of a wicked woman, he had his head chopped off. And his disciples had to come and take his body and lovingly bury it without a head. Greatest of the prophets. You may never see the results in this life of your work. There was a man called Louis Braille, and he was blind. And being a blind man, he thought something should be done to help the blind. And he figured out a system whereby the blind could be taught how to write and how to read. You know, it's not so long ago, I was in a home where there's a blind woman, young woman, and she was showing us how she writes. I knew up to that time that they could read, but how they could write was another matter, and she could write. She can write the Braille and she's blind. And the way those fingers go across, and the way she uses that needle, then she can read it out. She's written. Clever. And Louis Braille thought out the system whereby the blind could be taught how to read. But when Louis Braille died, he thought that all his labor was in vain. Nobody had picked up his system until after he was dead. And someone saw the value of it and said, "That's it." They took it up and used it, but Louis Braille died not knowing that his system was a success. And today you have thousands upon thousands of blind people throughout the world who are taught how to read the Braille. But Louis Braille didn't know about it. He was dead before his system was adopted. You know, you and I have got to serve. We may not see the results of our service here, and you can rest assured the Lord takes note of it. For Jacob, it was 7 years You and I, maybe a lot longer, but go on serving. The day will come when the Lord may say, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Faithful servant. Enter into the joy of the Lord. But now he's got to be taught another lesson. It's a lesson on order. Order. Now, look again at what we've got here. Look at verse 21. And Jacob said unto Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled. She's 7 years have passed. My days are fulfilled that I may go in unto her. And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. Now, I like that statement. He made a feast. I'm going to suggest to you that between that and the next verse, there's a lot of things could be written in that are not written here for our learning at all. You'll have to judge between the lines. He made a feast, a wedding feast. I'm going to suggest to you that at that wedding feast, they had something to drink that night. They were heathens, you know. Jacob was the only man there that knew the living God. It seems to me that Uncle Laban acted very subtly that night. I think he gave Jacob something to drink that he shouldn't have had. And being the wedding feast, I think he gave him more than he should have had. You know why? Look at it, verse 23. And it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah his daughter and brought her to him, and he went in unto her. He got the wrong lady. It wasn't the beautiful one he got at all. He got Leah, the tender-eyed one. Didn't he know the difference? I wonder why. Have you ever thought of it? See, Uncle Laban was a clever, clever crook. Of course, you remember Jacob was too. Jacob was a very clever crook. Well, where did Jacob get his cleverness? I think he got it from his mother. And you see, he's now dealing with his mother's brother. It runs in the family. And while he got a lot of cleverness from his mother, he's now head on with a clever uncle. And he gives them Leah. And he brought her to him, and he went in unto her, and Laban gave unto his daughter Leah Zilpah, his maid, for a handmaid. Now watch what happened. And it came to pass that in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this thou hast done unto me? Did not I serve with thee for Rachel? Wherefore then hast thou beguiled me? And Laban said, it must not be so done in our country, to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her week, and we will give thee also for the service which thou shalt serve with me yet 7 other years. Jacob did so and fulfilled her week, and he gave him Rachel, his daughter, to wife also. So he got both of them, which led him into a lot of further trouble. But watch this now. He's going to be taught a lesson on order. You see, Jacob never thought of order when he was in the house of disorder. There was no order in the house where he was raised. Do you remember? Each one had their own desire, each one had their own device, and the house was rent in pieces. God was never brought into the argument at all. And Jacob had to leave that house of disorder. And God brought him to the house of order, and he saw there at Bethel that God had everything orderly, the angels going up and coming down, and the Lord at the top having everything in control. That was order. But now here he's come to the house of discipline, and he's going to learn by bitter experience now that he's got to submit to the order of the house. And while it's perfectly true that Uncle Laban deceived him, it's just as equally true that Uncle Laban was acting according to the order of the law of the house. He says, my boy, it's not right to do this, you see. We can't give the younger one before the elder one. Oh, but I served you for Rachel. Now you're saying, well, Couldn't you have told Jacob that to begin with? You're dealing with two clever men. And how was Uncle Laban to know that long before the 7 years were up, perhaps somebody else would have come along for Leah? Somebody else could come along and have asked for Leah. Then it would be perfectly in order for Jacob to get Rachel. But nobody came for Leah. And the time has come, and Jacob says, I want my wife. I've said for her, she's mine. I want you to give her to me now. And in the morning he discovers he's got Leah. And his uncle says, oh no, son. You see, there's a certain law in this house, a certain order in this house, and we must abide by the order of the house. And we cannot possibly put the younger one before the... Oh. Jacob's mind goes back. He's learning his lesson now. What did I do? I stepped in before my older brother. I despised the law of our house. I didn't recognize the position of the firstborn son. I deceived him. Now I'm called upon to recognize the position of the firstborn daughter. And if he wouldn't recognize the position of the firstborn son in his own house, he's now taught the lesson that there's an order here, and he must submit to the order and recognize the position of the firstborn daughter. It's a lesson on order. Now go back in your thoughts now to what I read to you last Sunday morning and again this morning from Genesis 1 and Genesis 2. You traveled down through those 7 days called the days of creation leading up to the 7th day when God rested. You'll notice there's one word, so to speak, that would characterize that whole system, and it's order. You couldn't change those days one way or another. If you took what happened on the 5th day and tried to place that in at the 2nd day, it won't work. If you tried to take the 3rd day and place it the 2nd or the 1st day, it won't work. It's a law of order from 1 to